All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast edition. Week 6 in the books, and it was crazy. Crazy, I tell you. MWWire.com, that's our website. And thank you for all the fans who have interest in Hawaii for checking us out. You're very much appreciated, I should say. I'm Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly, hanging out over there. And you said this is the best conference. Is it because of entertainment value over the weekend? That was your tweet you put out, correct?
That is correct.
Do you still stand by it's the best conference in a variety of metrics?
Yeah, I absolutely do.
What are those metrics? Let the people know.
Well, I mean, to kind of follow up on what you just said, people want to watch fun football. And, you know, we'll talk about Hawaii a little bit later in this podcast, but Hawaii's fun to watch this year.
Not last night, but we'll get to that too.
Well, they were interesting last night.
There you go.
It was still entertaining in its own right. And I think that, you know, what the story of this particular week, our week 6 recap, is all about is, you know, a lot of things not necessarily going to the script, going, you know, with the script that we all thought that it would.
No, because we're almost, this won't be a midway show. We may have some stuff this week on Monday about, hey, midseason stuff, but like Hawaii 6-1? No. Nobody thought that in the world.
Hawaii's 3-0 in conference,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, 3-0 in conference. Who would have thought Air Force would be this bad? Utah State, nobody really knew what to expect of them, so they're just kind of stuck at third or fourth. They're now basically averaging 50 points a game, and look to, like, an argument could be made. I didn't put them number one, but argument could be made. They're the best team in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you could. I mean, also something like the fact that Boise State and Colorado State, who got a lot of preseason helium, right now, at least as far as conference standings are concerned, they're both looking up at New Mexico in the standings.
Can I tell you this? I was one of the guys who did not like Colorado State, so whatever that means.
That's true. I'll give you credit for that.
Excellent. Yeah, it's been, and then quarterback stuff. Let's just kind of start with that. We'll roll that into week 6 because I was thinking about before, I'm like, there was a lot of quarterback news because you did the quick post Ty Gainsey. Apparently, he only missed one day of practice this week. Didn't play. Didn't suit up for the game against Fresno. Cole McDonald was apparently some unspecified game, not game time, but game day decision to not play.
And that was really interesting. Can I just speak on that for a moment?
Yeah, go for it.
Because, you know, I was trying to find more substantiated sources besides the one that we ultimately cited in the article. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing I could find, which was a little bit startling, was from some Twitter user who didn't even have like an avatar or anything like that. It was one of the new
eggs, not the eggs, but the new egg.
The egg, not eggs, yeah. And you know, I believe his name is Mike. I don't remember the last name or if there was a last name. But he said that he had talked to Cole McDonald and that there was internal bleeding of some kind.
Oh.
And I was like, well, wait a second. Like, that might be significant. You know, something to certainly keep an eye on, not only for this week, but, you know, if it's a lingering issue, you know, we could be seeing more of Chevin Cordero in the weeks to come. But it was just one of those things where it was like, yeah, everything was framed as like a rumor starting about 60 minutes before kickoff. And then you started seeing more and more buzz about it on Twitter. And then lo and behold, you know, about half an hour before game time, it comes out that McDonald is in fact officially out. And of course, they don't tell us what it's all about, but you know, it was just one of those things. Yeah,
it's interesting. I should have listened to the press conference. I doubt Rolovich would say much, but we'll get to that game later. We don't need to discuss in that now. But then other games, like other teams, like just general quarterback stuff. Those are the two big ones. Then you have, I guess, Max Gilliam taking over for Monty Rogers, which was an adventure in its own right. You have Ryan Agnew at San Diego State. So basically, every Colorado State Mike Bobo being a jerk like he always does. Yeah, we'll play two quarterbacks. Like, we're up 28-0. Let's go to Colin Hill.
And people were thinking, does KJ Carter-Samuels have a concussion or something? What's going on? Like, they had the close-ups of him on the CBS Sports Network feed without his helmet or things like that. So they're like, he's out for the game for good. No. Mike Bobo was just doing things.
Well, we knew. I wrote a quick piece up on game day because they played the late game. Like, all right, let's give some word out there in the news that we knew Bobo. We knew he's opened up the competition. He mentioned quarterback because it's a sexy position, even though, again, that's not the problem with this team at all. But he's like, we're going to play both guys. And so I was watching the box scores, doing a few different things, watching what's going on. I'm like, oh, he's playing well. They're up 28-0. I put a jokingly tweet at halftime, Colorado State up 28-0. cue to Mike Bobo switching to Colin Hill just because. And I put it like in parentheses, like half kidding. No, it happened. So, and then it's just the only team that have not missed a quarterback due to injury or benching. Utah State with Jordan Love, or like a random halfback pass, or I mean the throw pass, a guy who's been their main quarterback, which are the teams that have been usually pretty good. Jordan Love, Utah State, Marcus McMarion, Fresno State, and Brett Rypien at Boise State. I'm correct, because you have Air Force switching quarterbacks. Every other team has had a quarterback issue, and it's crazy. Even San Jose State, they've been bouncing around with who they have, but they haven't been consistent with their quarterback play. So that's I'm going to do a piece on that, I think, Monday, just because it's interesting of how crazy the quarterback situation is in the conference. Because
maybe you need to update your quarterback rankings.
Maybe I should start those, because I haven't done those in a while.
Possibly.
I keep saying I will. Maybe it's a good time to do an introduction piece, like, hey, here's the quarterbacks, and maybe I'll do two posts. We'll see. All right, so we get to games?
Let's do it.
Utah State, BYU, old wagon wheel. Did you know, Matt, the old wagon wheel is so old, they're not allowed to roll it anymore?
I did not know that, but that's amazing.
It is, I believe, this is what, the 88th meeting, 90th meeting?
Something like that, yeah.
Here's the thing. Utah State was playing an extension of last year. First score, pick six.
No kidding.
I'm like, oh, here we go again. I chatted with, it ended up being 45-20. I know a bunch of buddies who do BYU stuff. I kind of follow the team for some work. I was on some interview with guys in town here in Salt Lake. They're like, it's a close game. Pick 'em. Is Coach Wells going to be conservative? I'm like, honestly, going into the game, I felt it was a pick 'em. I thought it'd be sort of close. I thought Utah State would win. But BYU's not very good. And I will stand by my – I can't stand by my 2-10 stupid bold prediction, but BYU's not very good.
Hey, you know what, though? 3-9 still very much in play.
It is. And if it's 3-9, I have all those people on Twitter. I'll go back and find those tweets and say, hey, it was a far off, was I?
That's true.
Because I will be petty, because how petty they were to me. I had former players. I had people I knew who were giving me garbage. I'm like, first off, if you read the title, it was a dumb, stupid, borderline prediction. More so than our stupid upset picks. And I went bold. Everybody else is garbage and doing stupid stuff. So 3-9, hey, they play Hawaii next week. Please let Cole McDonald play. That's my wish. All right, but this game itself, it didn't go as expected because the blowout. But look at this, Matt. Like we've said, if Utah State has a running game, they're going to be really good. And they found one, and they ran the ball well. And BYU's offense is terrible. They can't run the ball to save their life.
Well, maybe you didn't think it was going to be a blowout.
I thought it'd be a comfortable win. I mean 10-point victory. I figured it'd be, because if you look at the schedule from who Utah State has played, this is probably their second best team.
Oh yeah.
And so that's why I figured, okay, it's going to be sort of close. But it wasn't. Utah State was ahead 21-0. It wasn't a contest. So you picked the blowout. I didn't do the podcast. I just picked them to cover and win. Or obviously both, because they won. But I was thinking like maybe a 10-point victory, maybe 14 points. But yeah.
See, what was really interesting about how this game unfolded is that, you know, Utah State didn't necessarily get a lot of big plays early while they were building that lead. You know, I believe it was 21-7 by halftime.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you look at what they did as far as chunk plays are concerned, which are basically just, you know, passing plays of more than 15 yards or, you know, running plays of more than 10 yards, on the game, they had 9 altogether. But do you know how many came before halftime?
One.
And it was the 40-yard pass from Jordan Love to Carson Terrell.
Mm-hmm.
And then after halftime, it was just, you know, the floodgates opened. And, you know, for as good as the offense was in the first half, which, you know, I think it's worth mentioning, you know, Jordan Love, even though he only finished 18 of 28, 165 yards, did have 4 touchdowns. And he was also 10 of his first 13. So he was efficient in that first half when they were building their lead.
And a rushing touchdown, 5 total. He will be player of the week again, I'm assuming.
He's definitely going to be in the conversation. But it wasn't only that, too. It was the fact that the defense stepped up and put the offense in really good positions to succeed. You know, on the game, you know, if you go back and look at the average field position, you know, and a lot of that was driven by the fact that Utah State finished +3 in this matchup.
Mm-hmm.
But the Aggies, on average, were starting at their own 38. And they started on BYU's side of the field, or at their own 40-yard line, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different times in that game. And on average, BYU is only starting at their own 25. So they're basically like average field position. And that's, you know, kind of a huge thing, especially early on when the Cougars weren't able to get anything going. Their longest drive among their, you know, before scoring a touchdown later in the first half, they had an 88-yard touchdown drive. But before that, their first five drives combined for like 40 yards and with two turnovers. And it was just one of those things where everything was going right for Utah State, kind of like I thought it would. And things just got away from BYU in a hurry.
Yeah, they just didn't look good. Like I said, the running game, they got to Tanner Manga, what, four TFLs? Or just TFLs in general, a couple QB hurries. Five TFLs, four QB hurries, a sack. Like, they're getting to him. They're, like I said, the interception to pick six. Running game wasn't there at all. It also doesn't help when Squally Canada only plays the first half. Leaves, I think, with some injury. However, he still only had three carries. And so if he's your main back, why is he getting three carries in the first half? Partly because you're down 21-0 and you got to come back. The one concern I have with this Utah State team is how many times they got beat. Like, they could have had, BYU could have had over 400 yards passing in this game. They ended up with 322 with the Mango man Zach Wilson getting in. But you see how many times, like, they were just off target just by a little bit for how open guys were? Or they did a purposeful pass interference to only get a 15-yard penalty instead of a big 30-yard play. That's my one big concern when they actually play a good team, is if there's a quarterback, like, hey, they play Brett Rypien. When he plays well, he can be pretty good. Carter Samuels, when he throws well, going up against Preston Willis, well, Preston there, or Obasai Johnson throwing the ball downfield, and those guys get beat, that's a concern when they play those teams, because there's too many times they're getting beat downfield. And that's my, like, it's all great, they're doing well, one loss, but that's a huge concern. 12 penalties, 125. Those are my, I guess, if you want to look at issues, because those are big deals that could bite them down the road.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if you hadn't brought up penalties, I think that I was going to bring that up as maybe my larger quibble with how this game went out, especially in that first half. When they were building that lead, they had 8 of those penalties for 75 yards. So they were a little more disciplined after halftime when, you know, the total yards of offense were mostly even. You know, it was 252 to 225 after halftime. And that was mostly because BYU was just trying to play catch up. You know, they had 210 yards passing after halftime and barely tried to run the ball at all. So, you know, if they can kind of move back toward, you know, the national average as far as just being disciplined, if they can prove on what they did in on third down situations like they did in the second half, you know, they were 1 of 5 in the first half, 4 of 7 in the second half on third downs. Those are things to me that in the long run are going to make more of a difference. Because when you kind of step back and look at the whole picture, you know, yeah, and yeah, they ended up mostly even as far as like total yards of offense on both sides. But, you know, I've talked about success rate, and Utah State owned a significant advantage in success rate, 47% to 30%. And they just took more up. They took better care of the opportunities that they had to score. You know, they had 6 scoring opportunities, 6 times past the BYU 40, and they scored over 6 points per trip. And so as long as they keep doing that, as long as they keep forcing turnovers, and, you know, I think those are the most important things to me to kind of watch going forward.
There are, like, yeah, those are the big deals when they play teams that pass. But this game, like, BYU fans are like, oh, we got this, we'll be fine, they'll take care of business. But like I said, BYU is not very good, and people could tell me otherwise. I guess the Wisconsin victory was – I still don't want to say it's fluky, because they, when I watched part of that, they played well. But it's like I said in the – well, the preview nobody heard on my part. BYU's defense can't tackle, especially on the ground game. They are so soft at finding who to get on and find the ball. Like, look what – it was the basic – because Gerald Bright's a good back, but he didn't have the majority of the plays or majority of the yards running the ground. They put Darwin Thompson, who had 109 yards. They allowed – they just couldn't get to them, and they're running the ball well. Love is, again, passing well. Just going to say the same things, but this is a team where, like, I didn't put them number one, but they could be the best team. Have you filled out your power poll this week?
I have.
Where did you put Utah State?
I think I put them at 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so what, San Diego State, Fresno State, Utah State?
No, I had Fresno, San Diego, Utah.
Fresno. All right, that's fine. That's fair. Now, I was just curious because it's – we'll see. They're a great team. It's a they're fine. Like, there's just, we're nitpicking a little bit, but they're going to be a contender. Like, when they face Boise at the end of the year, this could be Utah State right now has the inside track to host the title game.
That's true. I mean, they're still going to have to beat Boise at some point, you know, just because, you know, yeah. Boise lost this weekend, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Doesn't mean they're out of it yet. Nobody's really out of it yet.
It's still right. Maybe not host. I'm just sorry. Let me rephrase that. Be the division champion. It's no conference losses, but Boise has the one. So there's still a lot to play, but it's a week-to-week game. And as of this week, it's crazy what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we get to, I guess, our Saturday slate.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so I guess we shall start with my scheduling's weird. What are we going to go with? What was the first game? It wasn't Navy, Air Force? Should we do that?
Commander-in-Chief's Trophy.
Raise your hand if you saw this coming. Now put it down because you're lying.
Well, raise your hand if you knew where this team has been all along.
This team's been just not what we thought they've been, right? They've been mixed around quarterbacks, injuries. They haven't been exceptionally well running the ball. And they did okay this game. But the defense, man, whew.
That's true. I mean, where do you want to start talking about this game? Because I think there's at least two significant differences, between what we've seen from the Falcons in previous weeks and what we saw from them on Saturday.
Well, how they stopped somebody defensively, I guess, right?
So we could start there, because I think the one thing that jumps out to me, 8 tackles for loss. And, you know, 3.5 by Jordan Jackson along the front lines. And that was something I talked about in the preview, is that very quietly they've been a pretty good about collecting tackles for loss, putting themselves in position to succeed. It was just a matter of, you know, being able to capitalize on those things. You know, when they can put an opponent into a favorable third down situation, can they kind of close the deal and get off the field? In this particular case, they absolutely did, because Navy was only 2 of 13 on third downs on Saturday.
Yeah, 2 of 13 third down, 1 of 3 third downs. They held Navy to only 100, like barely 3 yards a carry. Did they eclipse 3? It was like 3.1. 3.1, exactly. So when's the last time Navy's had like under 200 yards rushing as a team? It'd be hard pressed to find out outside of playing maybe when they play Notre Dame every now and then every year, or some bigger team they play. But I was fully expecting, if you told me the final was 35-7, I would have said it would have been Navy winning 35-7.
Oh yeah, I think I agree with you on that one.
And they started, I guess, sticking with the quarterback theme, Hammond got to start once again. He threw 6 of 10, 142. That's Donald Hammond III, I might add. Mm-hmm. He threw more efficient. That's what you kind of want to see from Air Force quarterback, where they, at maybe not 10 throws, but that's what, 25 yards a completion, 14 yards an attempt. That's how Air Force is going to be really good, especially if the running game isn't going as well. And it went fine this weekend. It went great. It's just that when you can combine both, they're not unstoppable, but that's when they're a really good team and can beat most teams in the country.
Well, and not only that, but you know, the fact that he handled most of the running workload as well. They ran the ball 55 times and he had 19 carries, including 3 touchdowns on the ground. But maybe more importantly, he was enough of an operator, like I talked about in the preview, to make the other guys succeed as well. You know, Caden Remsburg, you know, even though his longest run was only 19 yards, he averaged 4.5 yards per carry. That's a win. You know, he got Joseph Saucier in position to have a 48-yard touchdown run. Taven Berto out of the fullback position, he averaged over 7 yards carry. And that is a significant step forward.
Oh, for sure. Because this team now, 2-3. I did my bowl projections. I did not put Air Force in there because I'm still interested about what they could do, because this is just one game. It's a rivalry game, so it's a little bit more juice flowing through the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are coming off 3 straight losses. They've only beaten an FCS team until this point. Then they crush a Navy team who's pretty – they're usually good. They're not as great as they have been. They're 2-2 coming in. They beat Memphis, who – whatever, and Lehigh. So it's not like their wins are any special. But they put up a ton of – like, you figured we seen them versus Hawaii, they scored 41 points. You figured Air Force's defense isn't much different than Hawaii and what they probably would allow. And Air Force just stepped up and did it. And so going forward, we'll get more to this game. But I still have them on my bowl games because they still go to San Diego State. They still go to Army, who looks a bit better. They still got, well, I don't know. They got Wyoming, who knows. But this game, I'd say this is a – I don't see this as the team going forward. Do you?
I mean, I think when you look at their forthcoming schedule, there's still a lot of work to be done because – you know, in the next few weeks, they're at San Diego State, at UNLV, home versus Boise. Oh,
Boise, yep. I missed that one.
Yeah. So, but I think the upside is if they can continue looking like this, they're going to cause a lot of headaches like we've seen them do in seasons past. You know, they might go to San Diego and upend the Aztecs coming off of a big win. But, you know, I mean, I thought last, you know, a few days ago that I might be able to count the Falcons out. Maybe we can't, especially if they have the quarterback situation solved, and especially if the defense and especially the front seven can play like this.
Yeah, and that's one thing, too. They're not switching with any other quarterback. Aaron Worthman, they're not going to Sanders. So if they're going to stick, that's the thing, too. Stick with one guy. If Hammond's your guy, and you're right too, we mentioned this in our lost preview of on my end that we've mentioned before, but the quarterback should be having the majority of the carries or close to it. And he, like you said, he had only 60 yards, but 3 touchdowns on 19 carries. Give him that amount of carries, and if he can throw in this same neighborhood or even close to it, they're gonna 6 wins will be tough to get to at this point. Because UNLV, I don't know what to make of them with Max Gillian. We'll see with that, but see, they played a great game. This was easily their best game of the year. And now, all they got to do, air quotes, beat Army, they get the CIC back.
Well, and I think if we're looking for maybe one or two things that they can improve upon, one thing that I would keep an eye on going forward is, you know, they were only a little bit better than Navy as far as converting on third downs. You know, they were 5 of 12. But one thing that jumps out is they didn't have as many third and shorts as you might expect from a team that wants to stay on schedule. You know, go back and look at their success rate. They averaged 6 yards a play, but their success rate was only 38%. So there's still work to be done as far as staying on schedule, being successful on early downs, especially when you consider that their first 5 third downs that they had in this game in the first half, 5 yards, 6 yards, 6 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards. So yeah. if they can improve that a little bit, because they were 0-for-5 in those situations.
Mm-hmm. And flipped around to defense, like I'm going through Navy's third down, their first, I think, 4 or 5 were 7 yards or more. And they were stopped, I believe, on all of those.
They were 0-for-6 on third and long.
There was, yeah. And so what's third and long? What, the 6 and more?
9 or more.
Oh, 9 or more. But they even had some that were less than that.
Well, so, yeah, the only third downs that they converted yesterday were 4 yards or less.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was going through. I give credit to the defense for Air Force to not allow Navy to have 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3, where the fullback dive is a very key play, integral play to get those couple of yards. Oh, yeah. So, because if it's 3rd and 8 and they're going to run, you're not in the fullback dive unless you're going to go for it on 4th down and you're maybe too close to punt. And so it's like it takes away when you're a triple option team. All right, there's only 2 plays. It's a quarterback sweep, or, you know, I mean, there's only a couple plays you could really do. You're not going to go up to middle on 3rd and 8 typically for a fullback dive. So the defensive line, there are concerns. And maybe with him knowing the quarterback in place where it's only going to be Hammond, he doesn't have to worry about it. So looking over his shoulder, am I going to be benched for Worthman or Sanders? If this truly is the guy, then that gives a lot of confidence. And not that allows you to make an error, but you play a little bit more loose. You know, if you do kind of mess up or have a little inconsistent play, you're not going to get pulled out. And that's a big thing, I believe.
All right,
should we go to the next game? Because Air Force, that is, they are really quick, 2-3 on the year. So kudos to Troy Calhoun, who has been there forever, right? He's the, what is he, longest tenured coach in one team, right? 12 years?
Well, at least in the Mountain West, yeah.
That's right. All right, so where should we go next?
Let's go to Boise.
We have to?
We do have to.
Before we get to the game, we had a few bets made on the website.
That is true.
We appreciate. So there's a thing in our chat. We're talking like, let's do a silly Gatorade challenge. Red if Boise wins, loses. Blue if San Diego State, or you know, if Boise wins. Basically, whatever team you like, you cover. If you lose, you put that other team's Gatorade over your head. And there were no points involved either, which is pretty bold. It was just straight up. Because they're like, well, Aztecs were giving, what, 14 points? I think it ended at 2 touchdowns. Well, they didn't need any points because they won outright in this matchup. So if you check our Twitter feed, Raj and Eric did a poured some red Powerade over their heads, just in fun, and made a little comment. So go find that out on our Twitter accounts. But 19-13 was for me, not a very entertaining game. Unless you like fumbles and muff punts and mishandled snaps, then it's for you.
See, okay, so that I was going to ask you about that. Because was this a defensive struggle, or was this just winning ugly on San Diego State's part?
I would include bad offense on Boise State for bad throws. We saw bad Brett Rippon for the first time in like a year plus.
That's true.
That first interception was terrible.
It was,
guy had, I forgot who caught it, but he was so mad at himself because he tripped on the sideline. It would have been a clear pick six.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I think that was the Darren Hall interception.
I think so. It's like the very first pass play, but it's a combination of things where they run and do this and they try to do certain things and it doesn't work very well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make the case either way, just because, you know, when you look at the stat line, especially in the first half, I feel like both of these defenses are just playing at a really high level in the first half. You know, both teams ended up with 4 sacks on the day. You know, San Diego State ended up with 6 tackles for loss. Boise had 7. So they were both doing, I think, more than enough to keep both of these offenses contained. Like, you know, we thought that, you know, what is Chase Jasmine going to do to be able to keep the Aztecs in this game? And I think when you look back at what Boise was able to accomplish, he had 26 carries for only 78 yards and a long of 14. Yep. So I think that that's a win for Boise. And nobody had more than 57 yards through the air for the Aztecs. Fred Trevelyan had 3 catches, 57 yards. Ryan Agnew on the day was only 8 of 15 for 113 yards. I think all of those things are significant, you know, positives for the Broncos. It was just the fact that the Aztecs were able to do the exact same thing.
Well, there are also unforced errors, like Boise missing the punt return, the bad snap right there, the terrible throw. And so they get part of the reason I can argue the reason Jasmine only had 78 yards, look how many short fields they had to work with for touchdowns. They only had a couple. They had that huge long 72-yarder to the one running play. What's his name?
Jordan Bird.
Yeah, sorry, I think of Jason Bird. No, Jordan Bird. But you just, like, this is where, not to say, it would have made a difference if you don't have a muff punt, a bad snap, pick six, 3 total interceptions, and also not protect your quarterback, who was at least twice, if I recall, players untouched, and Rippon was getting hit after hit after hit. Like, he was getting crushed all night. I don't know how many times he got hit, but he was hit dead on at least 3 times for my count, probably more.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to the offensive line not playing well. And so, though, even if those would have stayed the same, but the two big things really was the punt, the two punt, again, same with Oklahoma State. Look at the special teams that caused them to lose. Look at last year, the last couple of times they played San Diego State, it's always been a special teams issue that ultimately did them in. And that was the case in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if I were going to make the counter argument, it's that both of these teams had multiple chances to succeed, and neither of them did pretty well with it. Like, yeah. if you look at field position, for instance, it was influenced by the turnovers that both teams had. But on average, you know, they were both starting at, you know, about the 32 or 33 yard line. That's, you know, that's not nothing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, San Diego State had 6 opportunities to score inside the Boise State 40, and they got only 3.3 points per trip. Boise's problem was just being able to move the ball once they had those golden opportunities, because they only had 3 such opportunities, even if they were doing a little better on average with them. So it was just one of those things where it's like, for instance, in that first half, I'm trying to remember which drive it was, you know, they get the ball at their own 39 after a fumble, and they go backwards 8 yards and turn it over on downs.
Yeah. You can't do that.
It's just, yeah, it's just instances like that where Boise had chances. And even in the second half, especially, you know, they get the ball over on downs on the San Diego State 47 and they go 3 and out. And then the very next drive, they get the ball at their own 44 and they go 15 yards and they have to punt. So they had opportunities and they just couldn't capitalize on them.
That's where I give Aztec's defense credit for doing that, shutting them down. Madison had only 66 yards. Rippon only had 170 and was barely 50% of the completion rate. Like, they were not – Aztecs were – like I said, look at the sacks. I don't know how he's – I guess he's the Aztec defense is credited with zero hurries because he was hit so many times and it wasn't really hurried or moved. But four sacks, seven TFLs, which are mostly – I mean, that just – they're getting to the quarterback. So I give – they all had chances, but mm-hmm. it was the Aztec defense that stood up more and made those plays where they needed to stop them.
So how much does this game affect your long-term outlook about the Broncos?
Well, in the power poll, I put them fifth.
So why?
Excuse me, fourth. Here's why. Fresno State, I still think they're really good. I did this, I mentioned before, I went San Diego State. Because here's why I put them number one. Long term, it's going to change. Here, this is my weekly thing because the way I do the polls, it's not going to be you're going to unless I do my bowl projections, which where I have Fresno as the top team and that going to Vegas Bowl at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But as for week to week, because that's what the polls are. They're not a season long look forward. Aztecs have the two best wins in the league, beating Arizona State and Boise State. They're playing backups, but they're winning. As for season long, I don't project them to stay that long, especially if Chapman and Washington are out for more than their 4 to 5 weeks because they might be out for the whole year. I know Chapman did dress, but there's no way he's going to play. He was there because why not, I guess, dressed up just to get used to it. I don't know. Maybe they're taping up his shoulder or protecting it just to see how it feel. Who knows? It's been a couple weeks. So Utah State number two because they're doing really good. Fresno for three because I mentioned at the moment what they're doing. Boise four. As for long term, it's my big concern is – I'm not overly concerned. That's where my big concern is. I'm not too concerned because we've seen Brett Rippon be bad and then really good the next week. It's just been a long time since he hasn't been good. And I think it's more to do with who they played. Because when they played Oklahoma State, he wasn't terrible. They just weren't getting plays. And Aztecs said as much, they were modeling after the Oklahoma State play where if you can get after Rippon, if you can beat the offensive line, which they did, then that's how they're going to win, and that's what they did by rattling him and hitting him all day long. But for the rest of the season, way you have the Utah State game, they still have Fresno. We saw what Air Force did this week. Who knows? I don't think BYU is any threat at all. And New Mexico, they've always given Boise some trouble, but at the end of the year, they're still going to be fighting for the division title and conference title, despite the one loss. Again, it's only one loss in conference play.
Yeah, I mean, I think these next few weeks are going to be really critical for them because we've seen Air Force improve on defense, you know, in a way that could give Boise State some trouble because we saw them, as we just talked about, they were able to stop Navy's running attack. So if they could do the same thing, how is Brett Rippon going to respond in that kind of situation? You know, we've seen Nevada, which we'll talk about in a little bit. They've taken a step forward on defense. You know, CSU.
Meh.
I'm shrugging my shoulders. You can't see it right now.
I can feel it.
But those are the three teams they face next, including two of them on the road. So I'm not panicking. I mean, I sense a lot of angst among Boise State Twitter about this game.
Oh, but let's because not forget, it's, like, it's San Diego State, forget, that's like, why.
Like 3 weeks ago, we just saw them bounce back, and we saw them beat Wyoming pretty convincingly. So I'm not going to be surprised if they go out and do the same thing against Nevada next week. So I'm not pushing the panic button just yet on this team.
No, you should. I think it's more because we lost to San Diego State. Like, they were a huge favorite and couldn't get it done. Like, when's the last time, not that they lose at home, but a two-touchdown, double-digit favorite and lose at home? Probably never.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm pretty confident that would be never because they don't lose at home. And when they lose at home, it gets a really good team, which not to say the Aztecs aren't, but when you have your three key starters out in offense, fullback is key to them, not to everybody else, you're probably not expected to win. So where does this put you for San Diego State then? Because they're still down those key players for at least a couple more weeks.
Well, I mean, I didn't really think that they were ever truly down and out, even without Chapman in Washington, because I thought that Jasmine would be, you know, enough of a running threat to be able to keep, you know, the offense afloat. And, you know, I had thought that Kagan Williams or Chance Bell would be the guy to step up. But if it's Jordan Bird instead coming up with a big play here and there, I think that, you know, we know what they're going to do. they're going to be led by their defense one way or another, and their defense is still 100% healthy. So they are still very much going to be a factor in this conference race.
Agree. All right, so next game?
Yeah, let's do it.
Next we have, oh boy, more quarterback issues. New Mexico at UNLV.
Well, quarterback issues for whom? Two very different kinds of performances from backups in this game.
UNLV, that's what I'm getting at. They both played backups. Okay, the only issue for New Mexico was that it was for, not an issue, but a note that Tuiaki, as we mentioned, is out for the year, so it's Sherrion Jones. Or is it Sherrion? Yeah, it's Sherrion. It's not Sherrion Jones.
Sherrion Jones.
Oh, Sherrion?
Yeah.
The two R's don't matter?
No, it does not.
Apparently not. Okay, Sherrion. Thank you for that, Sherrion. I thought it was Sherrion. Okay, Sherrion Jones. First off, 50-14. Can I make a extremely outlandish note at the moment, or take? I guess I'll have to use that word.
I'll allow it.
Tony Sanchez is in trouble.
You think so?
You have a bye week, and you lose 50-14 to one of the worst teams in the conference.
Well, did you see his comments after the game?
Yeah, yeah. And you're at home. He was not happy.
Well, I don't think anybody in surrounding UNLV football was very happy after that one.
But am I too? Because he's, this is what you're for.
Yes, it is.
He's probably going to stick around, but like, this is what old UNLV used to do. You get beat with a, I'm not just saying it's a backup quarterback. It's, sure, he's played, Jones has played enough, but he's not the main guy they'd probably want starting. But regardless, New Mexico hasn't ran the ball well at all this year, and they did really well, probably, I believe, at the look, probably their best performance of the year with the three touchdown rushes. But you have zero running attack against the New Mexico defense, which has not been good stopping the run this year at all. Max Gillian, minus 43.
Do you want to take a stab as to what, how much of a difference there was between New Mexico's success rate in this game and UNLV's?
A lot? Doubled?
Well, let me set it up for you like this. So by yards per play, New Mexico averaged 6.2 yards per play.
It's really good.
UNLV only averaged 2.7.
They weren't good. UNLV was terrible.
So wait. Do you want to take a guess?
Oh, double, I guess?
Or do you just want me to tell you?
Just tell me. I don't. Double. 50% higher. 100% higher. Whatever.
You know what? You joke, but that first guess is actually very close. Because New Mexico had a 55% success rate. UNLV's success rate was 8%.
So you could technically do worse at success rate than UNLV. There was a chance you could have been worse.
There was a chance you could have been worse, yes.
QB rating 1.4 for Gilliam.
I mean,
QBR. Sorry, different.
I mean, I did not expect this from Sherrion Jones. I think what I had seen from him in the games that I had watched before this was a lot of up and down play. And so I thought that, you know, with the talent that UNLV has on the back end, that there would be a little bit more of that. But he basically came out and was on fire the whole time. You know, Delane Hart Johnson had, you know, six catches, 80 yards. You know, Elijah Lilly, his lone catch was a 74-yard catch and run. I think it was the touchdown that he threw to Emmanuel Harris. Like, did you see that throw?
I don't think I saw that one, no.
Like, that was one of the best throws I've seen all year long. It was, you know, he was running, I believe, a corner route to the end zone. And, you know, Sherrion Jones just placed it right over the defender's head and into his hands. And so it was just like an unbelievable performance. And it kind of left me wondering, you know, when you take the last 3 weeks of Lobos football into account, like, which is the real Lobos team? Because if it's like this, then they're going to raise a lot of hell on the Mountain Division.
They sure could, because one thing, big thing too, we talked about, turning the ball over, he did not do that at all. Four touchdowns, zero picks.
That's
and
true.
He was turning it over last week. And what it does, it helps. Yes, if they're going to pass more, we know this isn't the same running attack they've had before, but he also led the team in rushing, 72 yards. You had guys like Tyrion Owens. They all had a couple guys with 40-plus yards. They were what they sort of were the past couple years, but with an actual throwing game. And you're right. If they could throw as well as they did. And then, did you see defensively? Five sacks?
Oh, yeah.
Seven TFLs? I know, like Tony Sanchez was pissed at Lexington Thomas about effort, but he's right. It's like we figured, jokingly, hand the ball off to Thomas, Williams, and Campbell and be fine. this, I don't know what happened for this New Mexico defense. Is it, I got to say it's more them than what UNLV did, right?
So I don't know if you saw this conversation that I had with Ed Greaney. I believe he's from the Las Vegas Sun.
I glanced at
because,
it, yeah.
Because he, I think he was kind of venting on Twitter about, like, it, does Armani Rodgers make that much of a difference to this offense? And if he does, what does that say about the rest of these guys? And one of the things that I had looked up before this game when I was writing the keys to a UNLV win is if you go back to last year, to the three-game stretch in late October, early November, where Armani Rodgers missed two whole games and only threw five passes in the other, UNLV averaged under 4 yards a carry in those three games. And so I didn't realize it when I was really, you know, thinking about the podcast or thinking about this game ahead of time. But, you know, maybe he does make that big of a difference, because Max Gilliam, I mean, he was a disaster. He had 123 yards on the day. And if I remember correctly, 83 of those yards came after UNM was already up 36-0. And, you know, you look at this ground game, Lexington Thomas, you know, he only had 6 carries. You know, Charles Williams only had 9 carries. Xavier Campbell only had 1 carry. And it was because they were just so far out of it so quickly that they couldn't do what they wanted to do.
Well, yes, but hold on. It was still 0-0 at the first quarter. It didn't. Why weren't they hitting the ball more often in the first? Because they were going 3 and out. They were trying to pass too many times. Like, they're throwing, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. They had chances in the first quarter to run the ball more. They didn't.
I mean, I don't know.
Because, like, he was throwing – when you're – okay, new quarterback. Never played an FBS game before in his life. The guy who called us out on Twitter saying he's coming to start. How about you show up and do something, first of all? But I get it. Let him throw the ball. But why not run the ball every single down for the first little bit? Why are you passing early on? It's like, let you have these guys who are the probably the best running back in the conference. Why are you throwing on your very first possession?
Can I tell you why?
Why?
Because by halftime, and I think this is pretty close to what the actual play selection was, by halftime they had thrown it 13 times and run it 11 times. Do you know how many yards they had on the ground at that point?
On the ground? I don't know, 50? 25?
Zero. They had 0 yards.
Still, I don't know. I don't know. They should – I don't know, mate. It's ridiculous. It's like their first two plays were a passing plays. The first three plays were attempted passes. Why are you doing that on your first possession? With the guy who's never started before, he throws incomplete first down, he runs around, has a loss, has to recover his own fumble, and then third and 13, you have to throw again, which I get 3rd and 13, but why are you putting him in those bad situations to make it in his first career start?
I don't know.
And then the first four plays were attempted pass plays. Why are they doing that to a guy who's never played before?
I mean, all I'm saying is, like, you know, if they wanted to try and be more balanced and attack this Lobo secondary, I get that, because Liberty was able to do the exact same thing just last week. It's just, you know, they needed the guys on the ground to step up, and early on when they still had a chance in this game, I mean, let's come out and say it. Lexington Thomas, Charles Williams, and Campbell just did not get it done.
No, you're right.
This is only the start. Armani Rodgers is going to be out for another 4 or 5 weeks. So these guys are going to need to get better, or it's going to spiral very quickly.
All right. Anything else we need to add on this game?
No, I mean, I think we're all set.
We're good. I vented because whatever. It's because. All right, let's take a quick timeout, and we will come back to talk about the rest of the games. All right, let's move on to the good old Fresno State Bulldogs. 21, Nevada 3. Another game, Matt, where, hey, another quarterback stopped playing 2 minutes before kick time. What's going on?
Well, what's going on is I think it played right into Fresno State's hands.
Exactly. Ty Ganji, it was weird because he only, one day of practice he didn't participate in, and there was no real hubbub about what the injury was, but they brought in Christian Solano to take over, and it did not go well.
Well, yes and no. I think it kind of depends on your perspective, because for a little while he was giving Fresno State some headaches. One thing that I thought was really interesting as this game unfolded is, you know, I don't know how much of it was by design or not, but they were using a lot of zone read early in this game, which when you look at the stat line, you might be surprised that Toa Taua, for as good as he's been in the first month or so of the season, he only had 26 yards on this game. And that a lot of that had to do with the fact that Solano was keeping itself quite a bit. You know, even though he was only credited with 71 total yards, a lot of that had to be adjusted for sack yards. But he ran for 100 yards before you adjust for sacks. And what this really came down to was just, you know, he was asked to do a lot, throwing the football as well. And he just wasn't as sharp as Taiganji usually is. He was only 22 of 43, 195 yards. He missed several deep shots that could have changed the tenor of the game. And, of course, he had the three interceptions on three, I guess I would say, really bad decisions overall. So yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, you could see this game unfolding in different ways if a handful of critical junctures had gone differently for the Wolfpack. But the things on offense just never really broke the way it needed to.
No, he ran well. He did. Like, he moved the ball pretty well, but he got sacked four times when he's throwing for, I guess, about, what, 200 yards of picks. It's not what – part of it is, like, yes, 200 yards is fine for this offense, but you got to have another guy running the ball as well. You mentioned Tua, Kelton Moore. You got to have it. I get it. He was keeping it himself, so that's a little bit – probably first started, but I'd be more comfortable doing that, but – ended up not working at all for them. But can we give some credit to this Nevada defense?
I would.
They shut down the Fresno State rushing attack to basically nothing.
Well, what was really interesting was that, you know, one of the things I think I talked about in the preview was that they needed to keep giving themselves opportunities to kind of to bail themselves out. And that's exactly what they did in this game, because I mentioned a minute ago that Solano had three interceptions, but do you know how many points Fresno State was able to get off of those?
I don't have it offhand. No, what was it? Not many, I'm guessing.
They got exactly 3 points.
Okay, not many.
Yeah, so Nevada, to its credit, like, they weren't maybe as disruptive as I would have expected them to be. They only had, you know, 5 tackles for loss. Although, you know, the one sack that Malik Reed had, did you happen to see that?
I did. Oh, boy.
It was just like, ooh.
He's good.
I hope that doesn't happen again. You know what I mean? Exactly. But, you know, they created turnovers. Damian Baber had a really critical forced fumble that Gabe Sewell recovered basically at the doorstep of their own end zone, kind of stifling a Fresno State score. So this defense gave them every opportunity to win this game. And that by pretty much every measure you could point to and say, like, this was a good thing. You know, Fresno State was only 3 of 13 on third downs. And, you know, they were 1 of 1 on their only fourth down opportunity, but they weren't able to equal the effort that they put forth last week against Toledo when it came to finishing drives. And that was one of those big things that really kept the Wolfpack in this game. It was just that the offense was never able to get it going.
No, so why was that? Because we've seen Nevada's defense not be they haven't been good at all. And so with what we've seen for Fresno State, because their running game has been kind of their big key to the offense for the most part. McMarion's doing a great job, but you see Mims, Rivers, whoever's running the ball to do okay. What do you think the difference was against this Nevada team?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know that I have a real good answer for that, other than that, you know, this is usually a team that leans more on the run than the pass. And what McMarion was able to do through the air, which was, you know, 20 of 28, 241 yards and 2 touchdowns, no turnovers, most importantly, that was more than enough to offset the fact that that Nevada was able to make them one-dimensional. You know, because Keyshawn Johnson had, you know, a solid game, if not necessarily a spectacular game. You know, Jared Rice had a big catch and run. You would say a nice catch and run of 69 mm-hmm. yards.
Exactly.
You know, and he was able to spread the ball around 8 different guys on 20 completions. And that, I think, is enough to offset it, because, you know, it kind of comes down to it sounds like it's a cliche, but, you know, good teams know how to find different ways to win games. And, you know, I would say exactly that about how San Diego State was able to win the game yesterday. And I would say the same thing about this Fresno State team as well. You know, even when one thing wasn't work, they kept going with the thing that was, and they were able to keep Nevada at arm's length.
So is this a – let's kind of look forward here. Fresno looked – they won comfortably. Was I correct in saying to take the points?
When you were. It was plus 15 at kickoff, I believe.
Because when we found out that it was not tight games, I tweeted like, hey, if you're legally able to do so, take Fresno and the points.
It was cutting it close for a while, though.
I was nervous, too. I'm like, oh, no, it's 7-3, 14-3.
You were going to lose someone's house for a while.
No, do not blame me for you betting your mortgage on this game. Oh, boy. No, but ended up – correct call. And I think it's an anomaly for Fresno State, but maybe not for Nevada defensively. Because we know Fresno State with who they have back on offensive line and what they've been able to do. Maybe Nevada's turning the corner defensively.
Maybe.
Because they had multiple people. Like, it wasn't just one guy. They had 5, 6 guys get at least a half a TFL.
Mm-hmm.
So guys are getting to the ball. And so, look, I still have them in the bowl predictions, very slim, because I thought the Air Force game was a swing game last week. And so I still have them. I think I have them at the Arizona Bowl, like the last pick, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
They have Boise at home, which it's already out like a 20-point line, which is, oh, geez, 20 points. We'll see. I'm probably not going to say a win for that, but they go to Hawaii, where I know they struggled. But we'll get to the Hawaii game. If Cole McDonald's not back, why can't Nevada maybe pull that one off? San Diego State at home. Who knows who's healthy, but still probably lost, but maybe closer. They could beat CSU. They could beat San Jose State, and they could beat Nevada or UNLV. So
That's a really tough stretch, though, those next 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's these three, Boise, Hawaii, San Diego State. They'll probably go 3-6 after that, and that's when their final three of the bowl game. But I would not be surprised that they might be able to pull off the win at Hawaii.
I mean, I think how they do in these next 3 weeks, even if they do go 0-3, is going to say a lot about where this team is at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because especially if they can get Ty Ganji back, you know, for the game against Boise, you know, we saw them in this game, you know, at least on one side of the ball, they had a much better effort against the Bulldogs than they were able to put up last year. You know, last year they gave up 41 points against a team that wasn't really even that explosive. So the fact that they were able to do this, I think, should give Wolfpack fans a lot of hope.
It definitely should be. All right, should we go into the next game?
Yeah, let's go.
Mike Bubba watch, hot seat watch, is that correct?
Maybe we can take it off the burner for a week.
I don't know, man. Colorado State beats San Jose State after nearly blowing. It wasn't 28-3.
But no, it was 28-0.
20, that's a good two. Was it like Boise State? It's 28-0 at the half. They ended up winning 42-30, so good for them. Here's the thing. I mentioned earlier on, like, oh, they're going to jokingly, oh, they're going to switch Carter Samuels at halftime. They're opening up the competition. Again, it's not the quarterback issue. But here's the thing. Can you trust anything Mike Bobo that comes out of his mouth? Can you even trust that he's breathing air when he opens his mouth or exhaling?
I don't know.
I just say no. I'll go that far and say no. Here's the thing. You're up 28-0 at the half. Your running game's coming alive. Curtis Samuels is doing okay. Let's bring in Colin Hill for a little bit. Let's let San Jose State, who is doing much better offensively. They had Tyler Nevins back in this game after missing, two or three games? Had a nice 73 yards total, 101 TD. They allowed 30 third-quarter points. Did you know San Jose State hasn't scored, I think it was, I saw 31 points against an FBS team in like a year?
Since 2016, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and they put up 30 in a quarter.
Yeah, I mean, this game was one of the weirdest that you will see all year long. And if you go and look especially at the quarter summaries of this game, that will tell you a lot about how this, because in the first quarter, you know, you mentioned why are they taking KJ Carter Samuels out of the game? He was 7 of his first 9. And, you know, maybe you could make the argument that his receivers were doing a lot of work for him, especially early, because Preston Williams, even though his numbers don't necessarily jump off the stat sheet, you know, 4 catches, 67 yards, 2 touchdowns, he was balling out there. Let's not lie.
He is one of the best receivers in the conference.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as a team, by halftime, when they were up 28-0, they were killing the Spartans on offense. And it wasn't just that KJ Carter-Samuels, maybe his efficiency fell off a little bit in the second quarter. He was only 4 of 11, but the running game had by far its best effort of the year. And, you know, that wasn't just Izzy Matthews, even though he did have, you know, 22 carries, 125 yards, and a score on the game. As a team, they were averaging 5 yards a carry. So, like, that was the first time all year, I think, that we've seen that crew come together and put together a really big performance. And then you start looking at the third quarter, and it's an entirely different game. Like, it makes you wonder why Colorado State was ever in this game to begin with. Because that's when Mike Bobo started messing around with Colin Hill. That's when the offense basically disappeared. They only had 25 yards of offense in the third quarter. And just all of a sudden, they could not stop the Spartans. And, you know, on the game, if you look at what Josh Love did, like, his numbers aren't that impressive. You know, he was 17 of 40, 232 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But in that third quarter, he could do no wrong. And it was just one of those things where they kept driving down the field and they weren't even taking that long to do it. I'm trying to look up what their time of possession was on there. So here's the time of possessions on their 4 straight touchdown drives. 50 seconds, mm-hmm. 1:08, 1:10, 1:30. And, you know, that last one, was, of course, was aided by the fact that one of their defensive linemen was able to intercept the ball and nearly take it all the way back. But it was just a totally different team on both sides in that third quarter. And then things kind of righted itself in the fourth quarter. Colorado State was able to kind of hold mm-hmm. San Jose State off. But it was just, you know, what it made you take a step back and think, like, what is Colorado State trying to do right now? And why are they doing it?
You want to know a fun fact?
I would love to know a fun fact.
In that third quarter where the Rams basically punted every chance they could,
mm-hmm.
they had 2 possessions that were, mind you, 3 plays and punting, 2 that lasted longer than 2 of San Jose State's scoring drives.
That's amazing.
They had their first possession, 98 seconds. Their second possession went 2:27.
Interesting.
I don't know why. Running probably because of inbounds. There's a lot of reasons that could be the case, but that is that's a fun fact, right? Tell your friends.
But it was just like it was one of those things. It's like, you're up 28-0. Why are you switching quarterbacks? What is the point?
I think the point, honestly, like, we could joke about it, but here's the thing. If you're not sure who your quarterback is, what isn't this the best time to stick him in? You have a comfortable lead. It's like, hey, what could go wrong? What possibly could go wrong? Oh, yeah, my defense is the problem. It's not my quarterback. It's the defense. But if you think clear, if you kind of take away what Bobo says about, oh, we're going to play this guy, that guy, this guy. If you're up 28-0 against a team that's known to not score a lot of points, it really is the best time to stick another quarterback in or backups in to see what they can do in actual game time. So the decision itself, while we joke about it, which, think about it, it's not really a bad position to take. But because, again, did Colin Hill cause it? He only threw 2 passes. So it's not like it was his fault. He threw pick sixes all over the board.
So then why aren't you just letting Carter Samuels hand the ball off? If you have a big lead and you're trying to just chew clock, isn't that something that your starting quarterback can do?
You would think so. They stuck him in. They put Hill in after that second possession where he got sacked twice, it looks like. But again, is that the quarterback's fault he's being sacked? I don't know. But you're right. But I could see both sides. Like, if you want to be super serious, it's probably the best time to stick him in. But also, it's 28. Oh, no, they punted. Sorry, it wasn't 28-14. But when did they – I don't know. It's just I could never know what he's doing. It's like – and then the interception, they put Carter Samuels back in, interception. Then they get to safety. And then they finally have 11-play drive where they do something. But on that 32-yarder, which is huge, there's 2 for 2. To go up basically 35-30 to put the game away. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's thinking, but I see your point. Like, keep Samuels in there, handoff, pass occasionally. But it took 2 drives. Like, all right, let's switch and see. But I don't know. If you're going to switch QBs, why not stick Hill in at halftime when you're up 28-0 and let him get those reps and not put him in a bad spot where your offense has done nothing for 3 straight possessions?
Yeah.
Or 2, I should say. Sorry. 2 possessions. But I don't know. This doesn't change for the Rams, nothing. They're still a team that's not going to go to a bowl game, and Bobo is going to be in question of keeping his job at the end of the year.
Boy, I mean, especially if he keeps putting Colin Hill in for no good reason.
And for like a couple of plays. If you're going to play him, if you say it's a competition and you want to see what he can do, put him in for like he did a couple weeks ago where he played a significant amount of time. Don't stick him in there for like four plays and say, you're, or, you know what I mean, a handful of plays, a couple of drives, and pass it twice.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point of that if you want to see what he can do? That's like, he's clearly not the guy. He's clearly never going to start until maybe November. Because he's probably still not healthy enough to take all those hits. That's why he's playing so few amount of plays.
Can we give some credit to the defense, though? Which because team? even it's Colorado State's okay. defense. Because even though that third quarter was really dicey, we should give them credit because they were able to pull it together in the fourth quarter and really shut down any chance of a comeback mm-hmm. that San Jose State had. You know, Jordan Fogel had a very critical interception that – on a deep shot from Jordan Love that actually didn't miss by much. He only overthrew his receiver by like inches right into Fogle's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, John Philip Bombeck, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name right. He's German, apparently. Okay. I didn't know that. But he had three sacks on the day, including two in three plays that led to the Rashad Ajayi pick six that put this game away.
Yeah, those back-to-back interceptions were key for them to get the win.
So, you know, obviously it's still a lot of work to do. Those 15 minutes were questionable.
You're nice. You're too nice.
But if you're an optimist, you look at the other three quarters and you say, we can build off of this.
My negative side is you did it against San Jose State for three of those quarters. But they did it, but they still did it, so you can't like, oh, you took it away. I'm glad or enjoyed that the running game, Izzy Matthews did something special, 125 and a touchdown. And also, San Jose State, like, they were down big and they didn't give up. They were leading 30-28 at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those two fourth quarter picks were crucial by Jordan Love. They had Nevins back. They're a team that they're going to be a thorn because they seem to finally figure it out to how they could score some points this year.
Well, yeah, and if you're a Colorado State fan, you look at next week's matchup against New Mexico as one that maybe is winnable if you can be more like the team that was in the first half than the second half.
Who do they have next week?
Colorado State home versus New Mexico.
Oh, yeah, okay. Let me ask you this, Matt. Would you mind taking a trip up to Lehigh Stadium next week for us? San Jose State an Army at Lehigh Stadium. Lehigh Stadium.
I forgot about that.
On ESPNU, so just saying.
Well, we'll see what my availability.
No, you do not have to. It's a game, Adam. That's just an odd situation.
All right, should we go to the last game?
Hawaii hosting Wyoming with a pair of excuse me. At one point, there was backup quarterbacks in this game. So let's get to it. If you found this game, and you probably did by searching our website because we note how you can watch the game legally on the stadium app, which do you have? Maybe it's my phone. I just watched it on my phone, not a tablet. But does it show you the score when you do it like long vertical or horizontal?
Yes.
My phone, it does not. So I have to flip it over to see the score and time is every so often. Could it be my Galaxy Note has an issue or something? I don't know.
Maybe.
So this game, Cole McDonald, as we mentioned before, as the quarterback drama continues, did not start, did not dress to play for some mysterious injury. We did find out during the recording post-game, Coach Rolovich said he doesn't know when McDonald will be back to play again, but said it's not going to be really long-term, which whatever that means. So he's keeping it close, not sure how often he'll be out or how long. But if he's out for a long time, this will spell trouble because they had to start true freshman, is that correct?
True freshman.
St. Louis High School out of Honolulu. Chevin. I watched the game on mute because it was late, so I didn't have the sound up. Chevin Cordiero did not look good except for the game when he touched on pass late in the game.
You think so?
I didn't think he looked that great. Offense was sluggish. But think about it. When you're going from what Cole McDonald does to this guy and you don't put up even 200 yards passing, that's maybe it's a skew of expectations of what they've been doing. But overall, it's for getting his first start, it's not bad. But just for comparison's sake, it wasn't good.
I mean, I think that I would say he battled Wyoming's front seven to a draw because, you know, he started out hot. You know, he was he finished 19 of 29, 148 yards, mm-hmm. two touchdowns and an interception. he started 8 for his first 9. So he was actually pretty good about moving the ball early. It's just that they couldn't close on those scoring opportunities that they had. And then, he was a little shaky about midway through the game. And I think that was when Wyoming's front four especially started asserting itself. Like, I thought that, when are these guys going to step up and start making big plays? Well, Carl Granderson had a sack. Logan Wilson had a sack. Johanna Gaifan had a sack. And, oh, by the way, it was Granderson who had that pick six that Cordero threw. But at the same time, I watched this game really closely. And what I can say about Cordero is that he's almost as elusive as McDonald is. Like, there were certain times where he was, under pressure and he was able to get away. So even though he was sacked 4 times on the evening, he still, I would say, ended up as a net positive as a runner. He's credited with 23 yards with the adjustment for sack yardage. But, he had some positive plays. He did have one run that was at least 12 yards. So he made a difference in that regard. So, I mean, when I look at that particular part of the matchup, I feel like, they both had their own victories and their own battles throughout the game. But on the whole, that, even if he wasn't quite on the level of Cole McDonald, I feel like that would have been an impossible ask. I feel like he was fine, all things considered.
No, he was fine. I was just watching the offense. Like, I didn't really tune into this until the second half, and it was pretty late. I'm like, I'm up. I'm watching. I'll keep going. Because that's what you do when you're dedicated. Plus, I don't think you could go back and watch this as a replay, which they should do so, but whatever. You know what I do like? I have a new favorite player in the Mountain West.
Who's that?
Dayton Faruda. Running back.
The fruit train?
Fruit train. Is that what they're calling him?
That is, I woke up a few days ago, and I believe it was their wide receiver coach, Coach Stutzman, had tweeted out the Quad City DJs. You know that song?
I do, yes. So that's what they're going with him, the fruit train?
Yeah, I guess so.
Watching him run the ball is a thing of magic, which we've seen before, but there are so many times, because he is 5'11", 250. He's like I don't know what a typical Hawaiian guy is, but they're usually kind of stout. Like, I know a lot of Polynesian guys, so I can kind of compare to what their built kind of is. You see how many times he tried to dive and, like, bulldoze people when he could have just easily, like, jumped over somebody and got, like, 10 more yards? Like, I saw, like, 3 plays where he tried to do that to Logan Wilson or somebody else. I'm like, dude, if you just jumped, you would have hopped over the guy on the ground and probably got 8 to 10 more yards. But he was just smashing people around and just going and going, and ended up being 100-plus yards, just over, one-on-one.
Yeah, and then here's the thing. Like, one thing that obviously Wyoming's going to want to watch, especially if McDonald's up for another game or two, is they did struggle a little bit as far as being able to keep the chains moving. They were only 3 of 12 on third downs. But, going back to the success rate measure, on the year they had come into this game ranked 12th in the country as far as success rate, 50.7%. Do you know where they actually finished in this game as far as that goes?
Where did they finish?
52%.
52%.
So they were actually a little bit better with the combination of Cordero and Faruda kind of moving the chains, being successful here and there on early downs.
So, all right. So this game here, not a lot of points. Wyoming's defense did their thing. Actually, let's get to Wyoming's offense real quick. So, Tyler Vanderwall, still not a good quarterback.
Still a work in progress, if we're being charitable.
Let's just say they're glad they have Nico Evans, who can actually run the ball now.
24 carries, 192 yards.
Yeah, and a long of 63. Not to say it's why his defense is anything special, but we should give them credit because they've given up a ton of points this year. So despite giving up nearly 200 yards on the ground to one player, it's crazy. Did you see this? They only gave one carry to somebody else as well. This is the Nico Evans show, and they wanted to ride him the whole way to get the victory. But Vanderwall, when did he come out? Did he come out in the third quarter, I believe, with that injury?
I thought it was in the first half he got checked out for, I think it was a concussion.
Because I had it on mute, so I wasn't really paying attention too much. Well, I was, but that's incorrect phrasing. They didn't have the volume on. He came back into play, so he came out second half. But he was in and out, wasn't clearly healthy enough. So maybe the 87 yards combo of being banged up and just banged up and
to,
not
to clarify it was in the second quarter. Yeah,
but my point is, like, you're playing a bad Hawaii defense which hasn't done well, and you can only do 9-16. Like, they had one decent pass to James Price, like a 21 yarder. Austin Fort had a pretty decent day, a couple catches, 20 yards. But if you're running the ball that well, how could they not expand the passing game to mix in some play action? If you're getting beat that bad by Hawaii's Hawaii can't stop that.
I don't know.
There was opportunities, I thought, for them to be able to score points. Because, again, the end of the game, let's move to the end here, because that was the most exciting part. The fourth quarter, Wyoming goes down, has to kick that field goal.
Yeah, and that's something to watch for both of these teams going forward, is the fact that neither of them were particularly good at closing drives. It was points per opportunity. Wyoming had only 2 points per. Hawaii was only 3.4 points per. So neither of them were particularly good about punching it in.
Yeah, the one thing that happened – here's how the game kind of turned. It was 10-3. Before that last field goal, I should back up a little bit. Wyoming was pinned deep, field possession game. Hawaii had to pick six. Huge. They ended up having to Wyoming did. Sorry. Why does ESPN put the team when it's interception for touchdown?
That's a good point. I have no idea.
It always kind of throws me for a second. That caught me there. So it was 10-3. Wyoming's up. Hawaii has to punt four and out. Okay. Three and out, essentially. Wyoming gets nothing done. They're pinned way back inside their own 10. So Hawaii they started that final possession, or to tie the game, not final, but at the 33-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm building up here, but they get the touchdown. Great. Wyoming then decides to, whatever, downs, punts. They get the ball back. All right. 13-10. All right. What are we going to do? Go to 10-10. They drive down. They get stuck like at the 6-yard line. They had a bad pass. Vanderwall had to run because pressure came huge for Hawaii and forced that third and six to be a fourth and five. He got 1 yard after being just I don't know who was chasing him down, but they got the play, good play call. They got the quarterback where he couldn't get the ball downfield. They didn't get enough yards for a first down because they still could have had a first down because it's first and 10 at the 11. Kicked the field goal. All right, 13-10. So what's Hawaii going to do? We've seen Hawaii this whole game. Short pass, incomplete pass, blah, blah, blah. They're moving ever slowly down the field. 2 yards here, 3 yards here, 8 yards for the first down. Second and 13. Let's just chuck it downfield to having one of the best catches to JoJo Ward of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the corner.
That, and that was a busted play, too.
Yeah, it was. He had to bounce out, to the bottom side of the his right side. Sorry, I was trying to get the screen. He rolls to the right, throws it down, beats the Wyoming guy down the field on a kind of a broken play a little bit. Boom, touchdown. Then Wyoming, I feel so bad for the Cowboys. The final drive, Matt. They start moving the ball down the field. They can do this. They did get a nice pass interference go for them because Hawaii had no chance of catching whoever the receiver. They move down the field. They can't clock the ball because they run out of timeouts. On 4th and 21, they get the first down, but time runs out. So close.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and here's another thing that I think we both overlooked. Is I forget exactly when it was because it doesn't quite show up on the play-by-play for this game. But there was one instance, I think it was either in the second or third quarter, where Marcus Epps dropped what would have been a sure pick six. And like you knew that he knew he would have had a pick six, and he just kind of dropped it. And I think that was when Wyoming had a lead. I don't remember exactly when, but I think that if they had been able to hang on to that, in the same way that, you know, maybe they had been able to hang on to those kinds of plays last year when they were generating so many turnovers. That was another thing that really changed how this game was, because it kept Hawaii in the game more than anything.
It certainly did. So as we've been doing every team so far, does it make a difference for either team? I'm assuming Hawaii, for me, if you don't have Cole McDonald, you're going to be in trouble when you play better teams.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe. I mean, I don't think there was as much drop-off as maybe you or I both expected.
Man, they've been scoring 40 points a game just about.
But they did a lot of things right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're going to have a chance.
They have BYU next week on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a Friday night game? What's the 13th? Is that Friday or Saturday?
I believe that's a Saturday.
That is a Saturday game, just making sure. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see if McDonald's back. That'll be, even though BYU isn't great, that'll be a tough one for Hawaii to win against because they're on the road. Any road game for Hawaii is like a trek across the country. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They're still sitting. Here's the thing. They're 6-1. They're undefeated in the conference play. They are 3-0, and they're leading the division, or I guess tied with Fresno State, technically.
No, they're two games up on Fresno State. Fresno State's only 1-0.
Why, Matt? Lost column stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Zero losses so far.
Mm-hmm.
And so what about Wyoming? Is there anything changed on your end? Because defense was what it was. Offense was what it was. Not good.
I mean, not really. I kind of expected coming into the year that they'd be up and down, that the defense would lead the way, the offense would be erratic, and that's more or less what we saw in this game.
Because they go to Fresno, host Utah State. Again, if they're going to go to a bowl game, they have to win their final four games.
Yeah.
At CSU, hosting San Jose State. Air Force now looks a bit more tricky after this past week, but I want to see more. And then maybe a little bit similar thing with New Mexico. So, not yet, Cowboys, right? Not yet?
Not yet.
Let me tell you this. The Football Power Index matchup predictor, Wyoming versus New Mexico, who do you think the favorite is?
I would...
At New Mexico, on the road.
At New Mexico? I would maybe say New Mexico 55%?
60%.
Interesting.
60. I was going to say New Jersey State just because we're here. Yeah, it's a blowout. 83% for Wyoming. Anything else we'd add? I think we've done an adequate job this week. No crashing. Way,
can we give a shout out to Kaimana Padello?
What did they do this week? What is the shout out for?
Well, he had 2 sacks in the win against Wyoming.
True.
He is now number 1 in the Mountain West as far as sacks.
Should he be our guy we look at for to be defensive player of the year?
I mean, I think now he's in the conversation. That's one of the really interesting things about this sack list. Like, I would guess that, you know, of the 5 guys who have 4 more sacks so far this year, you might be able to guess 2 of them.
Well, I'm looking at it now, so I'm not going to guess. But Malik Reed would be a safe pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, Durant Miles, Boise State, probably not. Tipa Galea, Utah State, also the pick 6 versus BYU. Mm-hmm. And then New Mexico, sorry to laugh, but New Mexico with Rashawn Epting.
He's been good.
He has been. So there's some good players on the list. We'll keep an eye on it, right?
There is a lot of season left. And I think if this week tells us anything, it's that anything is possible.
True. If you're a quarterback, you might get to play next week too.
Yeah, you may want to
get ready.
Maybe take it easy during the week.
Loosen up the arm every now and then.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put a piece up on quarterback stuff because it's been a crazy quarterback season this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I think that's it for our show tonight. Check us out, MWWire.com. Facebook, same thing, Mountain West Wire, MWCWire. Thank you to show up on Twitter. Also, every Sunday morning, we put the question out. Tell us how you feel. It's still time. Tell us how you feel about your team. Apparently, Matt, I put out my personal top 10 for our power, or top 12.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, some Fresno State fans do not like that I put them third.
Well, if it makes them feel better, I put Fresno State first.
That'll counterbalance, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And there's plenty of argument to make for the 3 teams, I believe.
I mean, I think at this point, it's pretty clear that there's a top 5, and then there's everybody else.
You put Hawaii in that top 5 for sure?
Oh, yeah.
I know they're 6-1, but...
Yeah, I mean, I still have them at 5 personally.
Me too.
But I think that you could make a pretty convincing argument for, you know, anybody in there. And it just kind of depends on how you slice it, you know, whether it's what they've done so far, what you still expect them to do, and so on. But yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear there's a top 5. I just have Fresno State at the top because I tend to stick to my preseason predictions when I do these kinds of things.
Also, there is still one voter at the moment, last time I checked, who has Hawaii number 1.
There you go.
That's fair. Go for it. All right, folks. So download, not Twitter. Yeah, if you want Twitter, download it. Sure, follow us if you do so. But go to Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts. Tell a couple friends. Tell them, like, hey, you want to hear about some guys who can't pronounce names talking Mountain West?
No, one guy who can't pronounce names and another guy who corrects him.
Very fair point. That's me who cannot say names sometimes. 60% no, 40% yes. All right, so that's a good way to end the show. So we'll see you guys next time when we talk week 7, and we're near the midway point. Now have a good one, everybody.